Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
For $5 a month, you can actually see the Thin Green Line interviews and other video content on Patreon.com. Just search the Thin Green Line podcast on Patreon.com. That's Patreon.com, and feel like you're part of the conversation. Join us.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Thin Green Line podcast. And we are very pleased and honored to have Mrs. Karen Hunter on the show today. Karen is coming to us from the great state of Kentucky. And those of you that aren't familiar with her, she's a certified firearms instructor in defensive handgun, carbine, and shotgun, a strong Second Amendment advocate, diving into conservation, which is music to our ears here on the Thin Green Line podcast, which we're going to talk about today. But the way we learned about Karen is through her publishing. She's an author and digital content creator for various platforms with gun and product reviews, educational topics, training opinion pieces, and all things related to Second Amendment advocacy, preparedness, defensive pistol and carbine, just preparing Americans for anything they might encounter. And did I read this right, Karen, that you've published over 1,000 articles in the writing you've done for numerous publications?
Wow, that's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work. Having written nowhere near that many, that is a lot of work, and kudos. And you can see Karen's print work in Ballistic, Personal Defense World, Combat Handguns, Tactical Life, Survivor's Edge, just to name a few magazines, with other platforms she's working on that we've been discussing lately. You're also the business development manager and event coordinator for Secure at Gun Storage, a company we will talk about today that's doing some really good things, not only in safe gun storage, but also training related to that. And you built that curriculum that we want to discuss. And you're diving into conservation. You're starting to get into the hunting world, which is a really, really cool story. And we're just happy to have you on the show today. And how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here. And I want to thank you both for having me. So
we got to start. We got to start by going back to your background. So you're definitely in the like-minded world of what we all do and what we stand for on the Thin Green Line here on the show. But it was a major 180 pivot for you from where you came from professionally years ago. And it was a complete change. And tell us a little bit about that background and why the shift and how you just decided to say, hey, I want to go a totally different direction from what I was doing and get into this world of Second Amendment advocacy and so many other things.
Okay. I tend to ramble. So if I get off
that's
on a
good
tangent,
for podcasting.
Bring me back. You're not going to send me. Just take
ramble away.
Yeah. So I grew up in, you know, a traditional conservative home. We had firearms, but it was like, you know, the shotgun hanging over the mantle, we'd go out and shoot, me and my dad, but like, it was never anything like I do now. It wasn't training. We didn't have a home defense plan. Like, you know, I don't know. We kind of lived in a town like Mayberry. So you leave the door unlocked. I mean, just, you know, things were just so different then. And then my brother, got his license to carry and started carrying a gun all the time. And I just remember thinking, why? You know, like, why? I mean, he's a gun nut, right? Like, this is, you know, he'd come over for holidays and I'm like, do you have it on you now? And it was just crazy. So after my divorce, when I was a single mom, my kids were little, he's like, you need to go to the range with me. You need to be able to protect yourself. And I was like, no, I was under the mindset, I was the person that I educate now. I'm not that far removed. And I thought, no, I'm protecting my kids by not having that in my house. Like, you know, in my mind, it was dangerous. And anyway, he wouldn't stop. He's persistent and relentless. So I finally went with him to the range, shot a handgun for the first time and fell in love with it. And it sounds cliche to say I felt so empowered, but I did. Like I thought, if I really knew what I was doing, I wouldn't, you know, I could be my own first responder. Like, you know, the reality of things happening in seconds really hit home to me. And I thought, okay, yeah, I want to do this. Plus it was fun and I was really good at it. Not to sound arrogant, but like he was really frustrated because my shots were better than his. And these were my first shots and he'd been like, you know, working at this. Right. So anyway, I was the typical girl. I showed up at my concealed carry class. Well, we did the class portion, which I literally fell asleep three times. I don't even know why this guy passed me because I couldn't even tell you the laws or legalities we went over. I mean, I was so that person. We went out to the range of the shooting portion. I had my little itty bitty Ruger LCP or whatever I went out to buy. I just wanted the smallest gun possible because I thought that made sense. In a Walmart bag with my ammunition and pink Air Pro. Not me now.
You're not stylish anymore?
I'm sorry?
You're not stylish? You don't have the pink ears? You got rid of those?
I'm basic black.
Okay.
I knew enough to know, even though I passed and I was able to carry this firearm, I knew enough to know that I didn't know enough. And so I looked for training. And all I could find was like, I don't know, you want to jump out of a helicopter and shoot a hog? And I'm like, oh my gosh, no. And then, you know, stuff where people are doing sit-ups and pull-ups and running and all, I'm like, no, I just need to know what I need this for. So I've finally found a gentleman that had a class. I was in Ohio at the time and he had a class in Indiana. I'm like, that's close. So I went there, spoke with him. And after the class, he was like, Karen, I want you to do me a favor. And I said, okay. And I did the dot torture test. I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, this, everything was just so foreign and weird to me. I'm like, why am I shooting this many times into this circle? And but whatever, I humored the guy because he was the one that had the most knowledge that applied to me. And he was like, you have no idea what this is, but you did really, really well. And if you really wanted to train and you really thought about it, you could become an instructor and you could instruct in, you know, with me and in his organization. And I was like, oh, I don't know, not me, you know, not that. And then the more I thought about it and the more I started training, I realized, you know what, this has helped me so much. I want to help people like me. So I kind of started going down that road and that organically led to writing. So I've always been a writer, not published, but I've always loved to write. And he told me, you know, you can do that in this industry. And I'm like, you can do what? And he was like, yeah. So he, Athlon Publishing House, all of the magazines John listed a second ago, that editor was introduced to me and he was like, all right, how many years experience do you have? I'm like, none. It was like, oh, and he said, well, let me give you a sample and you write and send it back to me. And I said, okay. And the sample was about the everyday gun owner fears that they have, things like that. And I'm like, well, that's easy because this is me, right? So I wrote an article, sent it in, and then he came back with 10 assignments. So that started the writing portion of my career. But I never, and this was so important to me, I never approached it as I am the subject matter expert because I wasn't at that time. Everything I did, I had to learn. I, you know, would never write about something I was not well versed in. And if I had to write about something, then I dove into it and learned everything I could about it and applied it. And so that I'm always coming from a genuine place. So the way I approach things was, I am just like you, the reader. This is what I've learned. Here's, you know, all the things. And that served me well because my reader base was able to identify with me. I wasn't so far removed from where they were, and it really resonated with them, and they felt at ease. And that also happened in my training and instruction. Everyone assumes I train mostly women, but I actually train mostly men. There are a lot of men who are afraid to go to a class with other men, because as a man, you're supposed to already know this stuff. You're supposed to be the man. You're supposed to know firearms. You're supposed to protect your home. So they feel more comfortable with me because they know they're not going to get, they can just ask the questions that they may feel other people would deem as stupid. So I kind of went down that road. And obviously it's been years since then, but and not much catches me off guard because I'm pretty well integrated in everything. One of the biggest things I love to do is to bring companies and people together. So that started a business consulting side of my career. And for me, it's about educating people and getting all of the information out there, because as you know, that doesn't come from media. That doesn't come from, I mean, we're inundated with all this information, but you have to really sift through to see what's right. I was caught off guard recently when I got connected with John. And again, if I'm going ahead or off a tangent, let me know, but this is just kind of how my brain's going. But we connected and I was like, who is this guy? And we were probably been connected like for a year, but you know, on social media, you just don't know everybody you're connected to. Right, so I went and checked out his profile and I'm like, wait a second, what is this hidden war? What is this game warden thing? What is all this? And when I got to know what he did and all of the things that were happening, I was shocked because I had never heard of that before. Never. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how is this going? And I have not heard about it because I'm so integrated in so many aspects. And I don't know. So that just like ignited a passion in me. I'm like, people need to know this. Like I would have wanted to know this years ago. Like, does that make sense? So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, so then that made John kind of like the next thing. I'm like, I want to get him connected with people. I want to write about him. I want people to know that this is happening, you know, in our country, because so many people think like the hunting industry is over here and the self-defense industry is over here and everything is kind of separated. But really it's all like, we need to be well-versed in all of that, even if it's not our everyday, like as I'm getting now into conservation, like even though I'm not, you know, I've never been a hunter, except by name. and that's not something I've had a few experiences and they're rather comical, but like, you know, I don't know much about that. So but I want to, because I'm seeing more and more, I believe in why people hunt. I believe in conservation. I believe in all these things, but I see things coming now from the other side acting like it's not needed, or it's just trophy hunting, or it's cruel, and that's the same thing that happens on the self-defense, you know, the Second Amendment side of things. Like that's not the truth. We need to get the truth out there. And so I always try to use where I'm at in the industry, even if it doesn't directly correlate with me personally. You know, I'm learning to hunt. I'm learning these things. I don't know how often I'm going to go out there by myself, you know, and just go do it for my family, right? But I want to learn these things so I'm educated, so I can teach other people. Because even if that's not our everyday or our passion, we still need to be supporting each other to bring the community together.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the things that Wayne and I really appreciate, and when we connected, is we hear that all the time on the Thin Green Line. I mean, Wayne and I have had 30-year careers, and obviously it's still to this day a little bit baffling about how little the general public knows about the intricacies of what we do on the conservation officer front. And it's not just met cartels and tainted weed and human trafficking. It's everything. It's search and rescue. It's, you know, marine offshore stuff that we've had some discussions on. And we're appreciative that you're taking a role in the Thin Green Line and putting everything out there that is important for the country, obviously, not only from animal species and regulations and balanced species, but, you know, the real threats we face out there that the whole public faces. You've written for so many magazines, obviously, and you've got a wide publishing reach, and you didn't know about that. And that still says something of why we are on that very tenuous little thin green line. So, and that's why we started the podcast, actually. Obviously, we have Warden's Watch and we have Thin Green Line now. And that was one of the positives that came out of COVID, to have guests on like you that can help put the message out there on what conservation officers are doing and how important it is and how delicate our, you know, wildlife species as a whole are in balance right now. So thank you for being part of the Thin Green Line first and foremost, and helping spread the word, even though it's not everywhere yet. So
yeah. And there's one thing that, like, I hate to be ignorant on things. And I remember how I felt when I thought I was being safe by not having a firearm, and everything I learned after that to, you know, obliterate that ignorance, right? And do not take this the wrong way. The ignorance I had with what you guys do was the only thing I knew about a game warden was my own interaction years ago. I was with my uncle, I mean, years, like childhood, and we were fishing in a state park, and, you know, this guy comes up, right? Ranger, whoever, and do you have your fishing license? No, we got kicked out. Anything we had to go back. And so, like, that gatekeeper, like, type thing for the forest and for the parks, that's all I knew. I mean, really, that's an ignorance, and people aren't stupid, but, like, you just don't know what you don't know. So when I saw the video that you sent me, John, I'm like, what is this? They're like train, and knowing what I know now, I was like, this is a whole area I never even knew existed. And it was really eye-opening. And so I immediately thought, people need to know this. We need to get rid of that ignorance and be supportive, because in part of your video, it was the lady who was in the community, and she was talking about the stray rounds that are stray bullets that fly by. And I'm like, see, this affects every single person, even if you're not one to ever want to go in the woods, right? It still affects communities, and it's, you know, not just in California, to my understanding, it's all across the country. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we like to say now, right, Wayne, that the pen is mightier than the sword ultimately. And Wayne having tenure on Northwoods Law and doing that reality game warden TV show, you know, over in the Northeast, and us with Wild Justice out here, articles that you would write, things I've been very fortunate to get into publishing post-retirement in phase two now, that's what really blows up the awareness and gets people concerned. I mean, every day, game wardens all over the country, as you know now, I mean, they're working their tail ends off, but it's kind of that silent mission, right? It's that hidden war. It's kind of quiet. And so we just got to get the word out there. And once people like yourself in publishing, you know, that just care about everything America's about, that we all hold near and dear, right? Public safety, the ability for our families to enjoy the outdoors safely, and our generations, our kids, our grandkids, our nieces, nephews, to see what a steelhead trout's going to look like before they're wiped out, or pristine waterways and deer herds and elk herds and everything else. So that's what we're really trying to do. And the reaction that you gave when you went, what the heck is this all about? And started questioning some of the things we're doing and going back to those shows I just referenced. That's eye-opening and very, it's very encouraging. It's very motivating, but it's also very humbling right now that we still have a long way to go, right, Wayne, to constantly get the word out. And we appreciate the help you're doing. But let's go back to when you made this shift. You made a career out of something that's a dream for many people in our world. Mm-hmm. How did your family and your friends react to that? Because it was what were you doing before? You mentioned that in the past. So.
Well, by trade, I went to school for cosmetology, so doing hair and curly. And but I didn't like that because I love people, but I do not really enjoy the general public. So you just never know who you're going to get in your chair, and then you have to keep that. Anyway, that did not go well. So I moved from that into the health industry. And so I began working for a physician. I was a surgery scheduler, and I handled everything from his surgery schedule to his dry cleaning. Like, he's very good to me, very sweet. But it was that, you know, not my passion. It was a 9-to-5, and it you know, did well. But when I started doing this, and I started carrying a gun, and I started learning all of these things, my mom, who is a great mix between Carol Brady and June Cleaver, thought I had lost my mind. I mean, she was already concerned because my brother is walking everywhere, what she would call it, everybody's strapped now. And I'm like, do you even know what that means, Mom? But so now her daughter, you know, is doing that. And then I have a little sister. So that's my older brother, my little sister. You know, she didn't understand either. So my most people in my family thought I had lost my mind and I changed. Well, I had changed because they thought it was for the worse. My brother was excited, but there was still an element with my brother because this is what I was just, I dove into this just full time. So my gun skills soon surpassed his because I just had the ability to train all the time. And I no longer needed to go to him for, you know, with my questions. So as a big brother, like who's very much a protector and, you know, very much he's my best friend. That was a little hard for him. So while he supported me, there was still that element of my little sister doesn't need me anymore, you know, type of thing, going on. But it was really my dad. My dad was so excited. And it's kind of funny throughout my life, like it's very important to me, that, especially like with my daughter, that people understand that being a lady is different than just growing up and being a woman. There's a difference. And being a lady who is still strong, independent and capable is much different. That's a choice, like to be a lady and I don't know, that's huge and important to me. And I think that's something that's being lost in society today. And I'm totally anti the whole feminist movement. Like I'm all about empowering, but like, anyway, I have a strong line with that. So, and that comes from my dad. So he always wanted me to be strong, independent, capable, do all these things. But, he, you know, anyway, long story short, as I'm going into this, I'm going to training, I'm working with 95 to 98% men with guns. My mom's losing her mind. My dad's like, heck yeah, you can do this. And I started to have to travel quite a bit and I had young kids. And I remember my mom, she's like, how can you just leave your kids? I'm like, Mom, it's 5 days. And she's like, but you know, these are your children. You need to be at home. You need to be, you know, doing the things. And in actuality, I was home more with my kids doing this work than what I was when I was working for the surgeon. So my dad would just come up from behind. He's like, no, go do the things, do what you need to do. The best thing that your kids could ever see is their mother making her way, becoming independent, strong, successful, all the, anyway. So at first, if it wasn't for my dad, I probably would have quit multiple times just from that pushback from just my immediate family. But my dad was just my biggest fan. Like his Facebook was just everything me, reposting me all the time. Like, you know, he was just, and he started learning right there with me. Like, even though, you know, he didn't know all the gun things. So like we built an AR together as one of my video articles. It was like a 4-part series where I taught my dad how to build an AR and then we went and shot it. And like, that's, he was awesome. just all in. It was just fantastic. So really it was my dad. Now that time's gone by, now, like, you know, my family's, you know, they get it. You know, my mom realizes I didn't change. It hurts. She didn't lose her daughter to the gun world. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, anyway, she gets it. So much better now. But yeah, there was major pushback at first.
No, very cool. Hey, I'd like to go back a little bit, Karen, to how you came into being introduced to the conservation and with your genre and stuff. How do we incorporate other people like you? Because I think we preach to the choir quite often and we need to expand. We need to bring people like you back into conservation to inform them. And I think we're lacking on that. Unfortunately, the reality shows, Northwoods Law, Wild Justice, I think that has flown after having our producer on, Ben Shank. I think that boat has sailed and now we need to move on to what's next and how to recruit it. And I always, when I think about this, I think about the cities are now voting for rural areas. You know, they are dominating politics for a whole state. And I'll use New York for instance. New York City votes for New York State and doesn't understand rural issues and stuff, but they are dominating it. And that's kind of what we're up against, is trying to educate those types of people or bringing other people that aren't necessarily know the conservation role and bringing them into our fold, so to speak, and the outreach from your perspective. What's the next step?
Well, for me, I think a true understanding and a true, you know, education of what it really is. So for years, I've been on this tactical home and self-defense side of things. And that made sense to me, you know. And I had been invited to go on hunts or things like that. And I'm like, no. And while I've never been anti-hunting, I did not grow up like my uncles hunted. And I can remember seeing like a deer hanging in their garage. And I'm like, oh, I don't even understand. Like, I'm that person that I'm such an animal lover. And I love the outdoors. I love to hike. Like, all of that's very important to me. But I never thought I could shoot anything, especially if it was pretty. Just like if somebody else does for the family, go for it. I'm not anti that, but I'm just not the one that can take the shot. So I've always declined hunting offers or things like that, and just kind of stayed on my side of the industry. I went on as a journalist, my first experience was going to Lake City Ammunition. I don't know if you're familiar, it was a really cool place. And they held a turkey hunt for veterans. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. Like, it's just a turkey. It's just a bird. And so I remember I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We sat in the blind for hours. It was cold, but it was quiet. And I have a hard time sitting still. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, so what do we do next? And he's like, shh, we sit here. I'm like, in my mind, it was like Elmer Fudd, you know, you're tracking in the woods, you're going to go find the turkey. There was no walking there. You're sitting. And I'm like, so then I started thinking about sitting and I'm like, I can't sit here anymore. So then I fell asleep and he's like knocking me. He's like, ladies, stop breathing so hard. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'm praying, God, please send a turkey. I can't sit here a moment longer. I can't do this. And anyway, so then the turkeys came, he got him, and I was like, oh, now we can breathe. Now we can talk. And I just remember thinking, never again. To me, that I had no idea what hunting was, but that didn't feel like hunting to me. The next thing I did was a quail hunt. And that's another story altogether, but that was comical. And I was just like, again, that didn't feel like hunting to me, even though I had no idea what hunting was. But then I went on, and then I did a hog. I was in Texas and I was doing a hog hunt, did it entirely wrong. Like, I see the hog come out and then I'm up on my feet and I'm just offhand with my rifle. Like, I can do this because this is how I shoot tactically.
Tactically, right.
Hit it in the, I don't know, somewhere back here where apparently it has body armor and it was running in the woods, right? And I'm like, what? I'm like, I hit it. And the guy's just like, Karen. I'm like, but I don't know. Nobody taught me any of this stuff. And I'm like, well, this was stupid too. And so my whole mindset's like, this is so not for me. Then I went and helped on a ground squirrel hunt. And I remember there was a media event and they took us all out because the squirrels were creating so many divots and holes like in the ground that the gentleman's ranch, it was in Oregon, that his cattle were just constantly breaking their legs. And once they break their legs, you know, it's over. And so they took us all out to just kind of start shooting these ground squirrels. And I'm like, but they're kind of cute. You know, they're like this prairie dog kind of, I'm like, I can't shoot that. And I'm like, well, I'll just miss, you know, I'll just go out there and just stand on the line with everybody else. And I'll just miss. And I don't know what happened, but we got out there and you see a little thing pop up. And I'm like, I don't know, something switched. And I'm like, oh yeah. And so then I got it. And then every time you got one, you had to call out your number, like 1, 2, 3, 4. And so like, I'm like 15, 16, it turned into like lethal whack-a-mole. Then I was just like on it. And then I wanted to win. And like, it was just ridiculous. And then I noticed other people were calling out 2, 3. And I'm like, oh, I just wanted to, they still joke about it to this day, but it was at that point I realized, because even after I started asking the rancher questions, I'm like, can you show me, I mean, I know I went in and I killed all these squirrels, but like, I want to know why, like what was their real damage? Did we really have to annihilate this whole prairie dog, whatever family? And he's like, let me show you. So he was showing me, you know, and what they do to his land, even beyond just the holes and the divots and how quickly they reproduce and all of, he just went into all of the problems. And I'm like, oh, so then I was able to relate from the standpoint of, I love to hike. I love to be outside. I love the outdoors. And when I love steak, right? So like when, so he has these cows and whatever. So I can see how one little animal, if not controlled, can cause so many problems to just wreck the whole balance of things. Like he, the whole thing came together. So for me, that's when I thought, okay, I need to start really learning how to hunt properly, and how these things happen. And even if it's not something I might not do, you know, every winter, or I might not go get a tag to get deer, but I want to understand this from their perspective and kind of bring the two sides of the industry together, because they really do go hand in hand. And there's a lot you can learn on the tactical and self-defense side if you start studying conservation. So that's kind of how my journey started. And I think some people just assume it's so different and that it doesn't affect them in any way. But for me, I think, to go back to your question, I think if just bringing in experiences and education and showing how everything ties together, that's what people need to do. It needs to be, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to become a hunter, but we all do need to understand what's going on so we can support each other. And I think just honest education, and I really think people like me who, like, I'm not coming at it from, you know, I'm this avid outdoors person and I just have all the answers, but I'm just genuine. I think people like me that address the issue can help build that bridge to gap the two sides, to bring other people in to start supporting what's going on. But I think the key is education so they can understand the whys. I have people in my family who don't think conservation is needed or real. They just look at it as mean and cruel to animals. And so, like,
fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know, right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
But that's an honest take on it. Just like with my mother, who would see an ad for, you know, the big bad AR-15 and how it's like the, you know, scary weapon. Karen, you don't shoot those, do you? Why, yes, I do, Mom. And let me tell you why. You know, but then you educate these people because they just, you know, they just, so I think that's the way to get these people to understand, not like come over to the side, but to start voting differently or start understanding things as they truly are versus the big bad preset that, you know, everybody tries to push. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it sounds like that's a trek that you took. So I'm just wondering, you know, you, the Oregon Trail, and hopefully other people will follow, and how to bridge that and bring new people in. Because hunters, I mean, we go to these shows and stuff, and we're all in the same group. But we need to expand, and we need to, like you said, educate. And it's so difficult to do that with somebody coming from that perspective. So it's awesome to hear where you came from and what your journey was. So maybe we can duplicate that with others. And I, you know, I think the Meat Eater does
a
great job.
I'm getting ready to go to Africa in April because, and this is really exciting. So Mossberg is doing a show about people who are either new to hunting or have never hunted abroad. So I have a really good friend that works there. She's like, Karen, this is you. Cause she knows my hunting stories. And I'm like, so she's like, I want to take you this, you know, you're going to cover this. And they're actually taking the group of us to Gunsight to do a class about hunting and what you should expect. And like, I can do long range shooting all day long. I get long range. I love precision rifle, but I've never applied it to like hunting, right? Yeah, so like we're going to go there and learn how that ties together, what to expect when we go to Africa, because their whole premise for the show is people need to be educated. They need to understand. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of starting that journey, which is wonderful. But I did tell her, I'm like, Linda, you know my hunting stories. Like, are you sure you want me to go? Like, this is going to be filmed. Are you, I mean, something crazy is about to happen, you know, because this is my life. She's like, oh, yeah, it'll be good. I was like, okay.
Perfect.
But my first thought was, I don't know what I can shoot. And I was looking at the list of animals and I was like, a zebra. And like, you know, so this is where I have to open my mind, because like all I'm thinking of is fruit stripe gum, right? Like, and like, no, it's a horse. And like, no, I can't shoot that. Wildebeest, I can do that. Warthog, I can do that. They're kind of ugly and kind of whatever. And this is how most people start reasoning through these things. But then I called Linda. I'm like, I can't shoot certain things. And she's like, well, let me tell you what we do. And then she explained how, you know, everything we get is going to a local village. And maybe that week that we hunt is 1 week that they don't have to go out and hunt themselves. So it's providing, it's not just like trophy hunting or just for game. It's like the animals being utilized is helping them. You know, she's like, and in these countries, they eat these things. And I'm like, okay. So this is just me having to get over my, you know, I grew up here in the United States. This is normal. This is not type thing. And and just become more open. But yeah, Mossberg is stepping into that role of trying to bridge that gap too, and bring people together and show the side to educate people that, you know, this is needed and this isn't, you know, bad type of thing. So that's exciting. And I'm hoping other firearms companies kind of follow suit and get in that as well.
Right.
I think to back up Wayne's question, that is the biggest key right now, is getting the non-hunting, non-conservation aware communities nationwide just aware. And I think when you address the idea that, hey, I'm not trying to make you a hunter, I'm not convincing you have to go harvest an animal for, you know, for sustenance or anything, but just understand in the balance, whether it's ground squirrel prairie dog control for habitat and grass loss because there's not enough predation. And I share the sentiment on the ground squirrel thing. You know, last year it was a 2,500 plus ground squirrel year here on the West Coast, and really put a dent in them, cattle country. And I mean, it was, Wayne, you and I talked about this, it was eye-opening to see that level of damage with what we've done for 30 years each and how destructive it was. And people were getting that from the non-hunting side, following me, watching the reels and going, wow, I had no idea. I used to think they were cute little squirrels. You know, I see the whack-a-mole analogy, but the land damage you filmed in one area in the sensitive foothills of, say, the Silicon Valley, they're like, we get it. Yeah, go, go, go. Let's go for 3,000. And these are people that didn't hunt. They didn't have guns, didn't have that background. So I think it's that soft sell, really. Just we can agree to disagree on what we want to practice, but let's agree that certain policies and certain practices are good for the benefit of all of us. And the way I always describe it, I'll never argue conservation is that, you know, it's something we have to do. I'll never argue, you know, gun ownership if people are against guns, but I'll say, look, let me just pose my reality here and let's just share some ideas. And I notice we've had this talk with other guests, the divisiveness right now in our country of the left and the right wanting to just bash each other on whether it's practices, whether it's mindset, whether it's lifestyles, whatever the case may be. I find that when we get out of the social media world and we get out of the hustle and bustle of our urban everyday life, and when we get in, like you said, we get in nature, Karen, we walk a trail. And I always, I have had the best conversations with complete anti-hunter, completely opposite lens of myself. If we've been fishing for the first time, or we've gotten in kayaks and floated my river, or, you know, we've sat on a park edge and watched waterfowl over a waterway. And something Wayne and I were very happy to see when we started this podcast in the middle of, you know, the terrifying overreaction of fears during global pandemic, when lockdown started, is how many people started to go into the outdoors that had no hunting or fishing experience or even an awareness of conservation, but just went out to be in nature. Like you said, before this, you loved to hike. You didn't want to sit in that blind. You wanted to move. You wanted to breathe that fresh air, see the sights. And it's healing. It's absolutely healing. And it saved so many people from, you know, depression issues, substance abuse, heaven forbid, suicide. I mean, there were so many negative, dark, parts of those lockdowns, and nature was a healer to the point where we saw 30-40% increase in firearms ownership for people wanting to be prepared, and suddenly finding people like yourself to get training, people going into hunter education, becoming certified hunters, just in case they had to sustain for themselves if the supply chain was gone. And for Wayne and I as game wardens to see that many people jumping into conservation education, it was a huge positive from one of the darkest times I think we've ever experienced in our lifetime, collectively, the three of us on this podcast. So it's a great approach. And when you can get to those, you know, not the preaching to the choir publications, but people that are reading, like I'm learning that non-hunters are starting to read American Hunter. People have become NRA members because of preparedness mindset, even though they were anti-gun. Now they've got a gun there, and they got to pick their publication, right? American Rifleman or American Hunter, if you're a member of NRA. And they get that American Hunter magazine, and they go, oh, okay. And then the how-to guides, and it just, you know, you ease into it. And
yeah, and I think things became real during the pandemic too, because like, I knew a lot of people that were like, I would never own a gun. You know, they're just so anti all of that. Right. But when the reality hit that somebody might come to your house to steal your toilet paper, literally people couldn't get toilet paper. And like, people were worried that, I mean, like we got really primitive really quick. And then like when those realities come in and people are like, I think I need to protect my house. Well, now, you know, now you want a gun. But it's the same thing with the, you know, the conservation side. I think people are realizing, you know, although I don't hunt, I enjoy what I see. I enjoy nature. And I think people are realizing, my hope is, and that I need to do my part to either support, you know, other, you know, organizations, or to protect that, because I can quickly lose what I enjoy. But I think everything got real during the pandemic, just like you were saying, you know, people were going outside more, but also people were like realizing how quickly like other people can go crazy and, you know, or get desperate, you know, like, so that need to protect, that need. So, you know, I think a lot of things shifted. And my thinking is if we educate now and we get information out now, people are still, even though we're more removed from that, the reality that this could happen again or whatever is there. So I think people are a little more like sponges right now, or more receptive to new information. We just have to get the right information to them versus the other side.
Absolutely.
Did you ever feel obligated to explore that with the last name of Hunter?
I get that all the time. Yeah.
So I'm not the first.
Everybody will either ask me if that's my real name or did I pick it for, you know, the industry? And I'm like, I don't even hunt. Like, that's like, no, that's my real name. I grew up with my whole life. Maybe in a weird way, it's like my last name's Hunter and I'm on the tactical side. Do you hunt? No. Maybe I probably should. No, I don't know. I am now, so we'll see how it goes.
Very cool.
It'll be a comical journey. So
absolutely, and that's what we need. We need a little comic relief in life for sure. It can't be all serious. We got to have a little fun with things. So I think it's a perfect name for you, Karen, to explore and go down this trail that you've been going on.
If we have time, I'll tell you my quail story really quick.
Tell that.
Somewhere I have a picture and a video of this. I went out with a dear friend and I was doing an article where she was going to spend half a day teaching me how to quail hunt. And then I was spending the other half a day with her teaching her defensive handgun. And the article's published, but what people don't know is when we went out, and I'm not a bird person, like I've had bad experience with birds in my life. So like, I'm not like, oh, pretty bird, but I still didn't want to shoot it. Right. Anyway, so she had this quail and she's sitting there talking to me and she's doing this with it. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, ringing it.
she was ringing.
Like,
yeah.
I'm like, why? And she's like, because we're going to go play in it. And I want it dizzy. I don't want to fly away. I'm like, why are we planting quails? Like, I thought we were hunting. Like, I thought we were going to go out and, like, you know, find a spot. They all fly up. You shoot one, and then the dogs go get whatever. And she's like, well, sometimes, anyway. So she's trying to explain to me. I'm not understanding. Zero understanding. All I know is it didn't seem fair to me, right? And so, like, this is my mindset. This is not fair because, like, we're at an advantage, you know. Anyway, So the dog goes to get the quail that's been rung, and then it was all dizzy, and then it flies up and I shoot it. And I'm like, I'm not shooting that bird because I just didn't feel like it was fair. I'm very self-righteous over here. And so I don't shoot it. And I'm like, okay, now we go to the handgun site. And she's like, nope, you're getting your quail. And I'm like, dang it, we gotta do this again. So we do it again. And again, I keep missing because I'm like super stubborn and I did not want to shoot it. And I soon realized she was so passionate about what she did. We were never leaving until I shoot that quail.
So you were missing them. Just so we understand, you were missing on purpose.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did. I just didn't feel like, again, super self-righteous attitude. Okay. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not shooting that bird. I'm like, oh, I missed. Well, darn, you must be better than me. Let's go. Now let's do handgun. Like, let's do what I like. Anyway, so I knew I had to shoot this bird. So I shot it. It goes down. And she had the cutest little girl. They were very Southern. She had the cutest little girl with her 6 years old who quail hunts. And it's really awesome. Anyway, so the dog, and mind you, I don't like birds. So the dog comes over with this bloody quail and it's looking at me. And I'm like, oh. And the little girl's like, Miss Karen, you got to pick it out of his mouth. And I'm like, what? Now I got to touch it. She says, don't be a wussy girl. And I'm like, okay, here we go.
So I'm like, I'm going to have
a 6 year old. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay. So I get the quail out of its mouth. You know, it's like, you know, head to the side. It's just hanging there. I'm like, ooh. Don't want to touch it. And I'm like, let's get the picture. So I hold the quail out there, and you'll see that in the article. You'll see me holding the quail. You'll see the quail's head to the side. What you don't see is I must have only stunned it because it wasn't dead. Because as at right after that picture was taken, the quail was like, and his head was up, and it turned around and looked at me, and I was like, I'm screaming. So then she takes it, you know, snaps its neck, and I'm screaming even more. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And she's like, all right, now we can go to the handgun site. I'm so done. But my problem with that whole thing was, had I been, well, comical and funny and all the things, had I been educated on what she was doing and why, and the differences and how they do the upland hunting, and if I had been educated on that, it wouldn't have been a shock, and I would have had the understanding of what was going on and why they do that and why they do the things they do. And then maybe I would have been in a different mindset versus that self-righteous, you know, I had these preconceived notions of what I thought hunting and quail should be, like I knew anything, but that's how we are as humans. Right. And so that's why I think the education is just so key, but yeah. And these are the experiences I typically have, things like this. So John, if we ever go hunting, you're in for it. So just so you know, something stupid is going to happen.
Yeah. No pin birds with weird necks. That's not in the equation. We're going to like leave that.
Sounds like ground squirrels would be great for you guys. So
ground squirrels.
That would be a good competition. That would, I'd like to see that. So.
Oh, wow. Look at you, man. Yep. Prodding some ideas here.
Yeah, no, I could see the two of you going head to head over the ground squirrel thing. I think it would be a great thing. So,
typically not a competitive person, but that one.
Oh, really?
You brought it on. I mean, it was on.
Yeah.
I can see it. John's a competitive person, so I think it would be a pretty interesting competition.
Yeah, I think we'd have to do little bolt guns like my 17 HMR and single shot.
Perfect.
And go through mechanics, right? Karen, you're an instructor. All the mechanics of working that weapon, slow it down to basics and just go to work. Wayne, get out here. I got another 17 for you. Telling you guys, we need as many guns on deck with these things because we're having another torrential winter. And I can tell you this spring, I don't know how I'm going to top 2,579 ground squirrels without burning up a barrel, but I need help. So let's go, everybody, to West
action.
Coast. Yeah, I need, and Wayne, we gotta participate. So
yeah, it's just, you know, if anybody's ever had mice in their house, it's the same thing. It's just, you know, you gotta get rid of them. You know, and now we've had so much flooding in the Northeast, rats are coming up and through. And, you know, I just talked to a friend that's an exterminator. He's like, I haven't seen rats in these spots that I'm seeing. And it's all the water is going down and our water table is coming up and the rats are going. I mean, the same type of thing. I mean, that's the squirrels, they do damage, the rats, the mice, absolutely. So
that's the funny thing, too. Like, I have a friend and she's like, always acts like things are just so terrible when you do them to animals, right? Like just so terrible. Until she got rats. She's from the Northeast. Until she got rats in her house. Mm. And she was like, somebody has to kill these things. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I thought you were so anti all that. Yeah, until it's like in your face and affecting you, you know, so it's so funny how people are.
Great point. Until it affects you. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the people that live there and deal with it have cows with broken legs, have, yeah, you know, wild hogs, invasive wild hogs destroying property. I mean, yeah, that's a lot of hard work to take care of that. And those hogs, you know, John, we're not doing it enough. They're spreading nationwide everywhere. And
they are, brother.
You know?
They are. And you know, it's interesting. Being here on the West Coast for the last week, you know, I put up that post a week or so ago, and with the torrential rains, there's a herd of hogs in the suburbs of downtown Silicon Valley stopping traffic. As I'm leaving, coming off of the ranch I was on looking for problem hogs, mm-hmm, and coyotes doing problems. And I mean, you know, not only are you doing the land damage, but now they're in urban areas in 39 states now. I think the hog population for the nation is estimated to be over 2.5 million.
Yeah.
We're even getting northern, and check this out, guys. So northern Montana, the most remote part of northern Montana on the Alberta border, we're getting what they call these super hogs from Canada that have adapted to take on and handle negative 30 below.
Yeah.
And I know how hardy these West Coast hogs are, or Texas hogs are. And these aren't the, you know, domestic cross-breeded quasi-feral. These are Russian razor boars that were brought over, you know, in the 60s on the West Coast and other parts earlier, Wayne, in your neck of the woods. Mm. And it's going to be a problem in every state, whether we like it or not. And us on the wildlife management side as game wardens or conservationists or hunters, it's just getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
From a public safety standpoint as well. And I like to say, you know, Karen, everybody talks about, oh, what you first thought going into hunting, like, I don't want to kill an animal. I like an animal. You know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. That I can't handle the face of that cute animal. And Wayne and I have had so many experiences growing up as hunters and educating younger, the next generation, of look at how an animal dies a natural death in the wild. If you look at anything, if you look at predation, if you look at what a mountain lion taking down a deer or a tule elk, and you watch a calf being maimed in a cattle herd by coyotes, mm-hmm, and torn apart. I mean, Mother Nature is vicious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is beautiful. She is majestic, and she is brutally, brutally honest, and will pretty much kick your butt all over the world, regardless of where we are on this planet. And when I show that and see that, how destructive and how painful it is for most animals in their natural lifespan, from whether they're an exotic species like a hog or they're a native, pristine, you know, Rocky Mountain elk. It's brutal. So to go out there as hunters, make a clean shot, put that arrow right in the pocket, have it be as humane, as painless a shot as possible, mm-hmm, and then harvest that animal. I mean, that's a win across the board wherever you go. And then selling that and people understanding that is something, I think, where we bring those groups together, like Wayne said, get out of our demographic and go to the others. And it brings me to your Africa trip, Karen, coming up. Mm. Obviously, you're going to go over there and you're going to have reach as a journalist. You're going to have media presence. Mossberg's going to do some video. You're going to write an article on that. And from your background of not being a quote unquote seasoned hunter, going into really what I call the big game capital of the planet, and when you see those plains game herds, having been to Africa a couple times myself, it's mind-blowing to see what the diversity of animals are out there, but how brutal that demographic is, how the older, mature animals are pushed out of the herd just to be eaten by predators, and they're ostracized like we don't even see in big game herds here in America. That was mind-blowing for me. And every animal you harvest is going to feed a village sometimes for as long as a month, depending on the size of it. And it's not just like us filling our freezers with game meat because we want better meat, quality meat, than what we're going to get, say, from the store when we buy beef. This is make or break. These folks live or die by the protein they consume from these plains game. And that was mind-blowing when I went to Africa to know that I couldn't bring any of the meat back, and I wanted to bring some just to sample, Wayne, right? Something, mm, your first spring buck, which, yeah, is a cousin of our, you know, western antelope. I'd like to try that steak, right? I can't bring it home, but everyone's going to eat that thing out of the hunter assistance for their village. that feels really good as a conservationist. And it feels really good as anybody that's just a humanitarian. So the articles you're going to generate from that event is going to be amazing. And I'm really looking forward to seeing, one, how it goes, hearing all the stories. We'll have to have you back on down the road and hear the stories of what happened on this
behind the
trip.
Scenes.
But what, yeah, but what we can do for the message with that. So excited to see the outcome of that and put and plan it forward with that.
Yeah. And if you thought my mom flipped out when I just started shooting again, she's really flipping out now.
Is she really? Because, yeah.
You know, she's not well traveled. She's not well versed. You know, she's just,
so you're going to do what?
Just, so in her mind, I'm like, I'm going to South Africa. I'm going to do this hunt. And she's like, what? She really didn't say anything the first call. But then a few days later, she's like, Karen, are you sure you want to do this? Like in her mind, I was staying with a native tribe, sleeping in a teepee and like, you know, going out with them when they have like spears and like, you know, she had visions of me coming up on whatever I shot and then like a lion coming in for it. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's gonna be like that, Mom. So I had to like actually pull up where we're staying and it's very, very much like a really nice resort. And she's like, oh, I'm like, yeah, this isn't like,
yeah,
it's like National Geographic or, yeah, I don't know. But, and I told him like, if Dad were still here, he'd be very supportive. So, you know, she's trying to be, but like, still it doesn't matter what I say or how I explain. And it's just such a foreign concept to her. I don't know. She's like, you just need to stop giving me heart attacks, Karen. I'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, no, probably not.
Well, good luck on that adventure. Look forward to hearing how it all goes. Before we, one other thing we got to talk about a little bit is, as I got to research your background a little bit and what you're doing with Securit and encourage the safety issue, a big part that I never really quantified because it wasn't something I think about the way we store everything on both fronts throughout the country and don't have that issue because we're carrying all the time, obviously being retired LE, locking up hunting guns. It's just, we take it for granted. But for the average individual buying a defensive gun, having hunting weapons if they jump into conservation or seasoned people, it's one thing to lock everything up so nobody can get into it, nobody can steal it, your kids can't get it and accidentally have one of those horrible stories we hear about every few years or more that make the whole industry just look horrible. You're actually taking it to a step further with training of how to deploy from a gun safe at night, by your bedside, out of a vehicle, which makes sense. Obviously, you have that gun for defensive purposes, or if you have to get it out for, you live in the woods and you have a wild animal. I mean, we have timber wolves in the backyard, basically in Montana, there it is. And my weapons are set up to deal with a four-legged predator as much as a two-legged predator. Talk about that a little bit and what you're doing with Securit and why we want to see more of that just in the industry when it comes to gun storage.
Karen, you're muted.
Oh, you're muted. Like, no.
Oh, it must like automatically.
Oh, you're back.
I think it automatically muted after a certain amount of time. So when I started, what I do now, I would get a lot of guns in, like just a T&E, write about it, and then I send them back. And when you have that fire, I'm responsible for it. So I'm like, I need to get a safe to store these. So I remember getting my first safe. It was a nice safe. But I remember being frustrated because it already was predetermined where my guns are going to go. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. And I'm so this person. And I think this is where, because I've not grown up with all this stuff. I think when you grow up and you're, or you're 30 years into your career, like things are just what they are and you don't question it because this is just what you get. Right. But I question this. I'm like, this is stupid. Like, this is really dumb. And like, anyway, I said, this says it's going to hold 12 and it's really only holding like, you know, six. Like I can't put 12 guns in. And I was just really frustrated. So I started like researching some stuff and I came across Securit and I came across Tom and then he had already come across me because he was trying to develop something and wanted me to come out there and sit on a board and do this product development. But what I loved about them was the inside was empty. You get to put your everything in there and customize it and configure it how you want it. Like, where do you want your guns? Mm-hmm. Nothing's predetermined. So that I loved. I wrote about them. It's the only safe company I'll ever write about. And that's been about 5, 6 or 7 years, something like that. Well, last year he was like, come work for me. And I'm like, no, I like what I do. And I like not, you know, having to whatever, but I did. So I still, so like I still do all my writing, and but then I also work with Secure. But as I was working with them in their marketing and developing department, one of the things that they have is fast access decentralized storage. So you can take different size safes and put them all over to your house so that you're never more than a second or two away from a firearm should you need one for whatever reason. But they're also safely stored from unwanted hands. And I'm like, that concept is brilliant. You know, it's not just this one big safe centrally located that you might have to, you know, travel to get to. Anyway, I just love that whole concept. But I started thinking, and I was talking with Thomas, you know, the safes are only fast access if you train with them. Like you get a safe, you put it in your house, you make the combination, put the gun in there, and you're like seconds away from a gun. But if you don't train with that combination, or you don't train on like a scenario, it's just like drawing your firearm. Like if you carry, but you never train, like how do you draw it? How do you clear your garment? If you never train for stress inoculation, if you never train for these things, because like you guys with what you do, those are second nature. For the everyday gun owner, we don't do that. And I also started thinking, like, I've done a lot of CQB classes, but it's always from the standpoint of me breaching a door, me going in the home, me rescuing somebody. I'm like, that's not my life. Like, that's going to happen.
That's not average American.
Yeah. But me being in my home and somebody, you know, a threat or something coming in, that's a reality. And now I might have to CQB through my house because I might have to go to the second floor to get my child, or I might have to navigate to go get something before I can even get to where whatever the home defense plan is. So I told Tom, I said, in a situation like that, biometrics can't be trusted because what if your hands are wet or sweaty or whatever, you know, and it doesn't work. I said, but even if you never practice with that combination, you never practice those scenarios, people are going to be like, they're not going to know what to do. So I wrote a curriculum about training with your safe, scenario-based training, the things you need to think about. We have the fast access safes, but if you incorporate this training and this curriculum of what to think about and even how to set it up. So a lot of people have their guns in their safe and I'm good to go. Well, if you're storing a loaded firearm, you need to be storing it properly. There needs to be clearance. You need to protect that trigger. It has to be situated in the safe where you can basically use the safe as a holster for your house. Right. You can access it quickly, open it, and draw from the safe and be at a low ready, whether it's handgun or rifle. All those things is what I put into a curriculum. And I had a media event where I had the top writers come in over the summer. It was in July. And we actually did a carbine class and then incorporated that training in a CQB house. We had our safes, you know, dispersed all through the house. I had a SWAT trainer come in and do like those scenarios, but I had them do them backwards. I'm like, do it from this standpoint. And it went so well. And all the writers were like, you know, this is a training gap. This is something nobody's doing, something nobody's talking about.
Never seen it before.
But so valuable to the everyday homeowner that has a gun and wants to protect their home. So yeah, so that's what we did. And we're really pushing that out there. And I'm lucky because Tom is such a wonderful guy. He's like, run with it, Karen, run with it. It makes sense. Do what you need to do. And so I get that freedom to do that. So
nice.
Yeah, really good stuff. And looking forward to diving in on that a little bit more. And I hope other companies follow suit. You know, there's a lot of storage companies out there and it's just, it's not covered. And now it's on, I think, all of our radar now, just from the standpoint of inside the home, especially with kids.
It just went on my radar, John. As a matter of fact, I was Googling it while you guys were talking. And it's funny that you hit a problem that I have, Karen, is the biometrics, because I have a biometrics handgun safe. Yeah. And there's been several times when it took me way too long to access that. And I'm wiping off the grease. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Other times it's boom, bam, done. Very quickly.
Yeah, sometimes but it's quick. And yeah,
those
and
times.
Like, I think what I teach is that is great for convenience. Like, just you just need to get in there for whatever, you know, or maybe your kids are behind you, don't want them to know your combination, or, you know, so it's wonderful. I think an option like that should be there, but there always has to be a fast access one that you train with in the dark at night. Like, like I'll blindfold myself. I have a fast box under my bed, right? And I'll just, you know, I have to clear the bed skirt, just like a garment. I have to put in the thing. I have to make sure it's, you know, in a position so I can index it properly, so I'm not fumbling. So I train like that all the time. But yeah, but also some people will say, you never, ever, ever lock up your home or self-defense gun because you'll never be able to get it quick enough. And you can, if you do this, if you have the right safe and it's, you know, set up properly. But I always tell those people, well, if you have your gun on your nightstand, you still have to wake up. You're still incoherent. You still have to index it from the nightstand. Are you even training with that? Because even just when just sitting there, like if you wake up and you're fumbling and you hit it, now it's on the floor or it's behind the nightstand. Like people don't think, they don't think about these things.
Or you wake up late. My son's got a rule. He's got to wake us up when he gets home. And there's been two times that, you know, he's been standing over my bed going, Dad, I'm home. And it's, you know, if that was an intruder, it would be too late.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's a perfect example, Wayne. Yeah. Mm.
No, it's kind of scary too. Believe me, it's just somebody over your, you know, Dad, I'm home, and that's what he's supposed to do. But holy crap!
Things like that happen all the time. People are like, you know, you have to know your target and beyond, right? Mm. But like, if you know, so having that in a safe that you can quickly access also it prevents those kind of things. So wonderful points. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Excellent. Thank you. That made me think. It made me, you know, rethink and reevaluate, which I hope it does to our listeners too. What you're doing and what you're training, and it's kind of like drawing it from your holster. That's second nature to us. You know, instinctive. Mm-hmm. And that's what you need to do, drawing it out of your gun safe, you know? And maybe that time, that little time, is going to give you that time for your brain to kick in and function too.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have some new products coming out. We'll be launching this spring, so I'm excited about that. We'll have another media event. And so lots of good things.
You can't give us a little peek into that?
Yeah. No. Oh, well, we have a new handgun safe coming out. I can say that. I can't say much more about it. So,
cool.
Because the one that we had, I was like, it was actually a biometric only, you know, safe. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you have to keep it clean. You have to keep it wiped down. You have to make sure your hands are dry. And I'm like, we need something that has keys. And so, and I love the CEO, Tom, he's, you know, right there with me. So yeah, that's exciting. So that should be March, April time frame, but yeah.
Very cool.
And all the good things.
Great stuff today. Thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your background. Very excited about Africa. We definitely all got to stay in touch and see how that goes, and certainly help promote whatever comes out of that from Mossberg. Obviously on the Thin Green Line, if we can help promote each other's messages, we certainly will. And where can people find you on social media, website, if they want, whether it's firearms training, they want to work with you for publication or any of the things?
My website is thekarenhunter.com. Got to put that V in there. You're going to go somewhere else. Instagram, most social media is just KLHunter42. LinkedIn, Facebook, you can pretty much just find me under Karen Hunter.
Very awesome. Yeah. Thanks for joining
us. Social media or LinkedIn is probably the easiest way just to direct message me.
Outstanding. And thank you so much for joining the Thin Green Line.
Thank you.
The most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors, every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.